Welcome to another episode of the Grueling Truths NFL Legends Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, a new interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. As always, for the Legends Show, I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster, and I want to welcome in my co-host, Matt Andruskavage.
Thanks very much, Mike. I'm glad to be here. I'm very excited, but I'm also a little bit bummed.
Why are you bummed now?
Well, it's been a couple of weeks now. We don't have any football.
Yeah, but I know. Sundays are rough. I'll tell you, I just sat around yesterday and just wondered what the heck I did before football season started.
Exactly. It's been 2 weeks now. It's like Sunday just doesn't feel the same. But at least we've got the NFL Legends Show.
Yep, and that brings us to our guest tonight, who played with the Oregon Ducks from Lake Ridge High in Oregon, played in the NFL for, what, 6, 7 years, JJ?
Nine years?
Oh, yeah, buddy. They give me 9 years.
Oh, you get the big pension then. But help us welcome to the Grueling Truth Legends Show, JJ Burden. How you doing,
hey,
JJ?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. How you guys doing, man? Good to be on the show.
Great to talk to players that Matt uses in any Super Tecmo Bowl tournaments he plays.
We were talking about that.
Yeah, I think JJ played too. Matt, get away with it.
Hey, I was super fast on Tecmo Bowl, so he's making a good selection there.
That's right.
Well, we got a tight end next week that he uses all the time, too. That's the thing. I'll get a player, and then I'll let him know, and then the first response is, well, I use him in Tecmo Bowl.
I know how much Mike likes to talk about it, so I got to bring it up to him.
Well, I like to talk about Tecmo Bowl about as much as I like to talk about Star Wars, Matt. So. But I actually I used to like to play Tecmo Bowl. It was in college, and we were drunk, so what the heck. But not that I'm condoning drinking. But we'll start off, JJ. Tell us a little bit how you started playing football. What drew you to the game?
Well, I was really more of a track guy, you know, in high school. And you know, I played football in the streets and then just decided I'd give it a go. And I loved it, but track was really kind of more my focus. But had a really good high school career, and I was an all-state wide receiver, but at 5'9", 133 pounds, you're not going to have, you know, Division I schools offering you scholarships. So it became more of a challenge at that point. I was really shocked that no Division school thought I could play. So I figured that, you know what, I'm going to get a track scholarship, and I'm going to find out what Division I school is going to allow me to walk on in football. And so through my recruiting, Oregon was the only school that didn't balk at the idea, and the track coaches promised that, hey, well, your second year, we will do our best to get you a shot if you just at least run track the first year. So I go to Oregon, I run track the first year, and then I started watching the Oregon football practices in the spring and literally begged Rich Brooks to give me a shot. And we kind of talked about it, and he said, "Okay, I'm gonna give you a shot. Let me see what you can do." And that's all I wanted was an opportunity, and I got it. And going into the fall, I was number, I think I was like, I don't know, 15th on the depth chart or something like that. But 2 weeks later, I was number two, and you know, they realized that I could actually play at that level, and you know, I was pretty content. Made the team, running track, things are going well, and having a great track season my senior year, and I was headed to the Olympic trials in the long jump, and to my surprise, I got drafted, and that kind of began the whole road to the NFL, which was a bit unexpected.
Yeah, and the track team at Oregon, I mean, was fairly well known just because I think Steve Prefontaine went there, didn't he?
Yeah, they have a great track tradition, and my freshman year, we won the national championship, which 5 years ago, I think it was, I was inducted into Oregon Hall of Fame with that track team. So a great track tradition. But it's so funny, guys, because I was so focused on track, and all of a sudden I get drafted by the Cleveland Browns, and everything kind of changed in my plans and my direction.
Well, you know, you talked about you're at Oregon from 84 to 87. Do you have any memories you'd like to recount there? I mean, you definitely, like you're saying, you jumped the depth chart. And what were your favorite memories over in Oregon?
I think the biggest thing for me was just watching the nucleus of the program starting to be established. And I often tell people that what you see of Oregon today, that started when I was there, because we were like 5-6 and 5-6 and 6-5 and 65, and we just started getting better players, and the depth was starting to increase. And I could see when I left there that, okay, this program could be headed in the right direction. And next couple of years, all of a sudden they go into bowl games, and now Oregon is what you see today. So my biggest memory is just the simple fact that, hey, we were part of that, the tradition, the foundation back in the 80s that led to this incredible Oregon program today.
All right, now you entered the NFL in 1988. Can you just tell us about those first 2 years? You didn't really have your professional debut until 1990.
Yeah, it was a rocky start, you know, because I was drafted by Cleveland, and I go to Cleveland Browns mini camp. Third practice, I tear up my ACL. So track is done, and it's like, okay, let's go to Cleveland for a year and get healthy. But that was kind of a blessing in disguise, because I was a little guy, and I was not real confident I could play the NFL. But that year on IR, where I was just getting healthy and learning the system and watching and observing with no pressure, I started to realize that, you know, I could play at this level. I just got to get healthy. So I go through the camp the following year. I have a really good camp. They're promising me I'm going to make the team and all that, and I'm the last receiver cut. So I get cut, and then I head over to Dallas, and I spend the whole year on Dallas's team on the practice squad, and it was a horrible team. We were 1-15. It was Aikman's rookie year, Jimmy Johnson's first year, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. I said, these guys are never going to win a Super Bowl, you know. So I leave, and of course they win 3 Super Bowls, you know. But that was a good year for me, because I just practiced, I trained, I got better, and by the time I signed with the Chiefs in 90, I was clearly ready to play. So not the most auspicious start, but, you know, it worked out in the end.
Well, you debuted in the 1990 season, like you were saying, with Kansas City, and your second touchdown, your second career touchdown was a 90-yarder against the Chargers. What are some of your favorite memories about your first season where you're able to play?
I think it was, you know, when we played, because I got activated like the second or third game, and then we were playing Seattle. So my first game is Seattle, and it's in Seattle. My entire family is from Portland, so everybody drives up there because it's my first game, and I end up, you know, I scored a touchdown in my first game, and I kept the game ball, and the thing I remember most about that game was my uncle was there, and when I was in high school, my uncle, who really believed in me way before I believed in myself, and he said, when you get to the NFL, I want your first touchdown. And I was like, what? You're crazy. I'm not playing the NFL. He says, just make me a promise. And I was like, whatever, my first touchdown you can have. Well, my uncle's at the Seattle game. I score a touchdown, and after the game, I literally just come out with the ball and just hand it to him. I just go, how in the world did you know? And he says, I knew. So that was a memory I never forgot.
Now, in 1992, you became a full-time starter. How different was 1992 for you than other seasons? I'm sure a lot more was expected from you.
It definitely was. And for me, guys, I was never really, like, trying to be a starter. I just didn't see myself as a starter. Now I'm, what, 5'10", 157 pounds. I just, you know, I didn't see myself, you know, achieving that. I just wanted to be on the team. And I remember at the end of the 91 season, I had a game, the very last game of the regular season against the Raiders, and I had like 8 catches, 188 yards, 2 touchdowns, 50 and 52. And because of that game, they started to see me as a starter. And, you know, initially I just couldn't accept it. But that 92 season, I was a starter, and I had to make the adjustment. And I'd say the pressure kind of picked up a little bit, but I definitely did the best I could to respond and had a couple of really good years there. And but it was neat, you know, from a little guy who was begging to walk on at Oregon, now at 5'10", 157 pounds, I'm a starter in the NFL. That was kind of cool.
So, you know, you said, you know, you were used to a certain way to play. Was it more the position that you had to play? You probably had to play split end rather than maybe in the slot or something like that. Was it just making the adjustment in a position?
Well, it was more a couple things. It was making the adjustment of playing every down almost. And then the second thing that I learned was, if I learned all four of the wide receiver positions, the X, Z, and then the two inside ones, then they could move me around and try to create mismatches, and I have more opportunities to play. So I made sure I did that. So one play I might be X, then I might be Z, and I might be H, and so they moved me around. So I had more responsibility. And really just, you know, you got 80 offensive plays, and you're playing a majority of those. Every play, you had to know what you were doing. You had to perform at a higher level. And you're always kind of looking over your shoulder because there's some young, tall receiver that's waiting for you to mess up. You know, so there was that added pressure to perform every day on every play.
Well, by 1993, there were some offensive changes, most notably the arrival of running back Marcus Allen and Joe Montana. What was it like to play with those guys?
That was a thrill, and it was definitely one of the highlights of my career since I didn't make it to a Super Bowl. But to be in the huddle with Marcus Allen and Joe Montana, I mean, you know, Joe Montana, I used to watch him play when I was in the eighth grade, and watching him win Super Bowls, and now I'm taking plays taking passes and hearing him give me plays, and it took me some time to adjust the fact that Joe Montana's in the huddle with me, you know, but it was great because I recognized clearly that I see why this guy has been so successful, you know, as a proven leader, as a, you know, how he prepared, how he executed, and made it lifted up my game because he was such at a higher level that I realized that I needed to make sure I was on top of all the plays, all the adjustment, because Joe was kind of like your Peyton Manning and your Brady of today. He was looking at the defense, he was changing the plays, and you need to make sure you're on the same play. So definitely an honor, but definitely, you know, motivated me to step up my game too.
Now, in 1993, when you guys made the playoffs, you were pretty much the primary target of Dave Craig and Joe Montana. You want to tell us a little bit about your playoff experiences?
Yeah, that was, you know, that was the highlight of my career, that 93 season, because we were, you know, we always made it to the playoffs, but now we have Joe, we have Marcus. We felt like, okay, we have all the pieces in place. So as we entered the playoffs, we were very confident that we would get to the Super Bowl. And you know, we had a comeback win against Pittsburgh. I had a touchdown in that game. And then we had a comeback win against Houston. I had a touchdown in that game. And then we obviously lost to Buffalo after Joe got, you know, knocked out of the game. But it was such a thrill to be a part of that team and to see everybody's attitude and their intensity and their confidence level just get lifted up every single game. I just thought for sure we were going to the Super Bowl. So, as I said earlier, a highlight of my career.
Well, there's two individuals from that team that I would like to know what it was like to play with and for. One of them is obviously Coach Schottenheimer, and the other one is Derek Thomas.
Well, Marty Schottenheimer definitely was a favorite of mine. He drafted me in Cleveland, and that was one of the reasons why I chose Kansas City, because I knew that he would give me a fair shot. I think many people have their different opinions about Marty, because he was kind of old school. We had really long and intense practices, but, you know, Marty was just a coach that demanded excellence, and if you did your job, he had no problem. And I was one of those guys that I did my job. I had a great relationship with him. He was a great motivator. I mean, the guy had some of the best halftime speeches. You know, he just knew how to really fire up the guys and get them to give more. And so definitely a highlight of my career playing for him. And then Derek Thomas, I mean, what an athlete. Just this guy, I tell you, though, he was one of those guys that really didn't practice very hard. He just kind of, you know, he kind of dogged it a little bit. But on Sunday, this guy would just show up every single play. And you look back on his career, and I'm thinking, wow, I used to practice and play with one of the great ones at that position.
Yeah, and then in 1995, you played for the Falcons, and their wide-open run-and-shoot offense, Jeff George, Drake Metcalf, Bert Emanuel, Terrence Mathis. What was that year like for you?
You know, that was a that was a year where, how do you put it, that was what an interesting decision that I made, because I really wanted to play in the run-and-shoot badly for June Jones and, you know, play with those guys. But I tell you one, I learned a valuable lesson was that when you're in the run-and-shoot, they throw the ball a lot, and you run a lot of streaks. And I ended up, I remember I pulled my hamstring three times the first year. Now, this is a guy who track his entire life. I never had a hamstring injury. But we ran so many streaks that I pulled my hamstring three times during the season, and the second year I pulled it twice. And in retrospect, my wife and I were like, maybe that wasn't the best decision we ever made to go to the Falcons. But it was still a good experience. We made it to the playoffs the first year. The second year wasn't that good. But it was a good way for me to end an unexpected career, because never in a million years did I think I'd play in the NFL. But to be able to say that I'm credited for 9 years is certainly an honor.
Well, what do you think of how the NFL, you're talking about, pulling your hamstring and on an offense like that. What do you think of the way the NFL handles player safety?
Well, I think they've done a better job. They definitely have done a better job, guys, because when I played, we had so much contact in practice. And inside practice, you know, people are always talking about concussions and games. In practice, it was where we were getting the concussions, you know, the intensity of the practices and the impact. I believe they're doing a better job. But, you know, if you notice, though, because they don't have much contact, they're losing some of the fundamentals of tackling and stuff. So it's like, where do you find the balance? But I do like some of the changes. They're obviously protecting the quarterbacks. They're protecting the wide receivers and trying to score more points. But it's, you know, it's a physical game, and it's really hard for them to really totally protect the players. I feel bad for the defensive players who can't really tackle and hit on instinct. You know, they got to think about turning their head and doing this. I think that would be really difficult to do. So, but it's interesting to see how the rules are changing, how they are trying to protect the players.
So what keeps you busy these days? I know you were talking to us off air about your website and your book, and you want to tell everybody about that and where they can find those?
Yeah, absolutely. So I made the transition from, you know, being a professional athlete to the business world, and I've been very, very busy in a couple different things. I'm a speaker, so I'm a motivational speaker, a keynote speaker. I'm also now a new best-selling author. I wrote my first book last year called When Opportunity Knocks, 8 Surefire Ways to Take Advantage. And I wrote it primarily to really create a blueprint for helping people understand that we all have opportunities in life, but here's how you take advantage of them. Here's how you really maximize them. So in my book, I cover a lot of those principles. And I'm also an entrepreneur. I work with a company called Isagenics. We provide health and wellness products. And so between the three things, my mission is to help people live healthier lifestyles mentally, physically, and financially. And I'm able to do that. So it's been good. You know, I've been happily married 25 years now. I have 8 children, and there's a never dull moment in the Burden household.
Dang, 8 children, JJ?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a story of that. I have 3 biological children, and my wife and I adopted our 5 nieces and nephews about 7 years ago. So that's how we went from 3 to 8.
Yeah, I've got 3, and 3's plenty.
Yeah, I know.
I got 1, and I'm good.
Especially when they become teenagers. I tried to tell Matt, just keep it to 1. You'll be fine. Yeah. Either that or at least have them 6 to 8 years apart.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. I have two that have moved out. I have two more moving out in the next month or two. So that'll get me down to four. So we're counting the days until we're empty nesters.
So yeah, but the bad thing about is I've always done that too, but as they get older and you look at them and you realize they're going to be gone someday, that kind of sucks too, though.
Yeah, that's true. I know what you're saying there.
Yeah, I know what you're saying about the counting down the days too, but it is a little bit both ways. I guess it's according to how good they're being that day, how I look at it.
That's true, because you have your good days and your bad days. That's true.
Yeah, and the more kids you have, you know, at least one of them's having a bad day if you got three. I can only imagine with eight. <Let's see.
laughs> I know.
But, hey, I want to remind everybody to go check out the Grueling Truth Facebook page. Tomorrow we will have a guest, former NFL head coach and offensive line coach Jim Hanifin. Wednesday we'll have former Cincinnati Bengals tackle Bruce Reimers, followed up by his old offensive line coach Jim McNally. And then Thursday, we'll have former Houston Oiler Greg Bingham. Matt, you got any final words for JJ?
Well, I just want to say how much we appreciate you coming by. Appreciate listening to not only about your career, but what you're doing to impact the lives of people. That's the stuff that I really enjoy hearing the most. And so I really appreciate you stopping by and spending some time with us.
No, thank you. I appreciate you guys inviting me. And I'm all over social media under the name JJ Burden. Everyone can visit me at my website, www.jjburden.com, and that's where you get my book. And if you connect with me, all I'm going to do is try to inspire you to go do great things.
Well, and I mean, I think with your career, just the size disadvantage you worked with at the start and what you turned that into is proof enough that people should listen to what you say.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot, because think about how many people out there where someone told them they can't do something, and I heard that all my life, and I want to do my best to prove people wrong and encourage others to do the same.
Yeah, and that's a hard thing to explain to kids nowadays, too. I'm sure you know that with eight of them.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they never want to listen. And the thing is this, if you can't believe in yourself, nobody's going to. You can't wait for somebody else to believe in you. You just have to believe it yourself. And then everybody else will fall in the line when they see it.
Absolutely.
So, once again, JJ, it was an honor having you on the show. Everybody check out JJ's website. Go buy his book. Make sure you listen to the rest of the Grueling Truth shows this week. Check us out on Facebook. You can also follow the show on Spreaker. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Land, about everything known to man. So, once again, we want to thank J.J. Burden for being on the show. So, for J.J., Matt Andrew Scavage, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
They aren't just houses. They're much more than shiny cars. And please don't call them objects. At AAA, we recognize your most valuable assets are more than just things.